Welcome back to Is It Horror? This is Season 3, Episode 14, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
I'm Joe.
I'm Matt.
And I am Steve. And unfortunately, despite my best promises from the last episode, Brianna is not able to join us for this one as well, but hopefully she'll be back on the next one, so we'll look forward to hearing from her there. But if you have not joined us before, each episode we analyze a piece of media, usually a movie whose horror status is debatable. We look at the creator's intent, audience reception, and the content of the media, all in an effort to better define the horror genre. And if you agree with our take, that's awesome. And if you don't, that's awesome too. As always, horror is a diverse genre, and all are welcome. But before we get to the film, we're going to go to Joe's Get to Know You Corner. Take it away, Joe.
Okay, so talking about Doctor Strange this week, and, you know, just the MCU, and, all right, so what is your favorite MCU movie? What's your favorite hero or villain, and or villain, at least as portrayed in the movies? What storylines would you like to see in the MCU that they haven't done yet? Or what storylines that they've dropped have you been sad to see go, or that they didn't flesh out as much as you want, or... like, you know, which things do they, you know, sort of disavow that you are upset about? I guess I'll start us off. And on that note, I guess one of the things that, like, always bothered me a little bit is that they kind of started, they, like, hit the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show pretty hard for a little bit there. And I felt like, I know it was kind of its own thing, but especially when they got into the, like, I don't know. They got into the like whole Hydra thing, and like it was playing right along with the movies, and it felt like it could have been, you know, just hand in hand with what was going on in the movies, but they just kind of chose to not take it. I don't know if they weren't taking it seriously or exactly why they did, haven't really kind of brought it into the fold, especially with the way that like the multiverse is working in the MCU now. So I don't see exactly why that's not part of it or couldn't be part of it. And maybe it is, maybe they'll bring it back sometime and be like, oh, it was always part of it or whatever. But I don't know. I liked a lot of the characters they used there. And I liked a lot of the storylines they were going with on that, in that show. It certainly wasn't perfect. I mean, it was a, you know, maybe in some ways it was a little too like TV quality, quote unquote, as opposed to the kind of more big budget movies they were doing. But yeah, anyways, that was one of the things that I wish they would have taken a little bit further. And I guess to maybe a smaller extent, I didn't get into it quite as much, but like the Agent Carter show, I felt like they could have done more with. And I liked her character. So, yeah. Those were a few of my thoughts. Maybe I'll jump in with a few other things, but I'd love to hear some of your guys' MCU thoughts.
Just in general, I wanted to jump in and say, like, the TV side of Marvel, it's kind of been frustrating because it took three tries for them to kind of get it right. Because, you know, like, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter sort of maybe counted, but then maybe didn't count. And then the Netflix stuff counted, but then they were like, oh, now it doesn't count. But now maybe the Daredevil and maybe the Punisher stuff counts, but it's still up in the air on the other ones. And I guess now for sure we can say that all of the Disney Plus TV shows count, but it like took three tries to get it right. And it's kind of been annoying with this whole like, I don't know, uncertain continuity thing they've got going on with the TV side of it. I guess they needed complete control before they could be sure that they wanted it to count, I guess. It's annoying.
Yeah, it's been frustrating.
So, yeah, for me, I would have to agree with some of what's been said. I think we'd all like to see more of Hayley Atwell in the MCU. So I agree with you on the Peggy Carter stuff. And then Also, yeah, I think one of my favorite things that's like in or not in the MCU is probably the Daredevil Netflix series. So I'm glad that they have brought that back. I was a little bit saddened that Daredevil never made it into like what I call the golden age of the MCU, which has now, in my opinion, ended. So
yeah.
I'm sad that that didn't happen, but I also really appreciate the Daredevil series for what it was, and hopefully that character can do some cool stuff in the future. I guess the only other thing that I would say about the MCU is that I really like Spider-Man as a character. It's always been one of my favorite comics to read. And I think the sort of origin story of Peter Parker has been done so many times over and over again. And some of, I actually think most of the times that they've done it have been pretty good. I even enjoy the Andrew Garfield movies, even though they're not my favorite ones. But what I really want to see is either Peter Parker, who's more of a seasoned Spider-Man, going through college, or the Peter, more mature, married to Mary Jane, being Spider-Man, having kids, being an adult. You get that a little bit in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with Peter B. Parker, but I'd like to see a Spider-Man story that's not focused around his origin, I think, is what I would like to see. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, because I've always been a big Spider-Man fan, really. Like, I have Spider-Man comics that I got as a kid that I don't remember getting, so I guess that's how far back it goes for me, is like, apparently in the time before my memory recorded, I was begging my parents for Spider-Man comics because I had just some like that. But I would like to see an adult Peter Parker in film. Like, if they were ever to make a Spider-Man 4, or even at this point, like an Amazing Spider-Man 3, I think that would be a little bit more interesting to me. And I wasn't on board immediately with what the MCU was doing with Spider-Man, because I know, like, it took a while for me to get there, and it took a while for me to understand, you know, I had to see the third movie to kind of see what they were going with in the MCU, because they were basically, guilt is a huge part of Spider-Man. Guilt, like it is to Catholicism, is important too, also to the Spider-Man mythos. You need the crushing guilt or it just doesn't work. And there was kind of too much of a guilt-free Spider-Man in Homecoming and Far From Home. It's not that they were bad movies. It just felt like there was a component missing to what makes him a hero. And I feel like we finally got that with No Way Home. And so I know, like, liking Spider-Man, I don't have this real deep cut take on what I think is the best MCU movie or anything, but I think maybe that's the one that I've enjoyed the most, that I've enjoyed watching the most, just because after thinking they were never going to get there, it finally kind of gave me the version of Spider-Man that I wanted to see on film, which was him left to his own devices and trying to take care of himself. And I know we kind of just ended the movie with him at that spot, but I'm excited for what could happen next with that, so long as they're able to get that Spider-Man 4 movie together. That's what I want to see, is the street-level Spider-Man who has no resources but his intelligence and his dwindling bank account to work with, and seeing him still be the hero that we all want him to be. So that's the thing that I most want to see. And then after that, if they want to retire that character or whatever, that's fine. But I need to at least see that Spider-Man 4 movie, I guess. So I guess that's my answer all wrapped up. What's my favorite one? Probably No Way Home. And I really like seeing Thanos on screen as a little kid who is reading Infinity Gauntlet in the 90s. And being first introduced to Thanos, being able to see that story play out on the big screen on this huge budget film, and to be able to walk past random people to have opinions about Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet when it was something that no one but myself had ever heard of back when I was growing up, is kind of wild. Like, if I had, of everything that's happened, maybe that's the thing that, you know, little kid me would have been most amazed by about the future. So, I don't know. There's a lot of things that are good about the MCU, but there's a lot of things that are frustrating, but those are at least some of the things that I've really liked about it.
I think just throwing out a random character, we could get into a whole bunch of different things, but one character that I liked on the villain side of things was in Thor Love and Thunder. I thought Christian Bale did a really good job with Gore, and I thought Gore's character was really interesting, and I felt like it was a good, like, I don't feel like the MCU is, I feel like, often kind of black and white with its good and bad characters, and I thought Gore was a interesting example of kind of a maybe that ties into what we're going to talk about in this episode with Multiverse of Madness, just sort of like, can you take a good person and make them a bad guy and make it feel right? And I guess that, in my opinion, I felt like maybe it worked better for me in Love and Thunder, I guess. And I liked, and maybe it's because I didn't have a previous connection. Sorry, we're kind of maybe getting into more than I meant to get into in this little conversation. No, it's okay. But I had a previous connection with Wanda, and the way they took her in this one made me frustrated. But it was, I feel like in Love and Thunder, Gore was an interesting character with maybe a semi-similar arc, I guess.
We'll get into the Wanda side of it soon enough, but at least for Gore, I felt like that storyline was a really cool one in the comic series. And I was a little, like, I think that Christian Bale did a good job with it, and that was presented in a way that, you know, was interesting, but I feel like there was a lot that they could have done better with that, and I kind of wish that they'd gotten a little bit chance to do a more self-serious movie. I think Ragnarok hit the right tone, and Love and Thunder got a little too on the comedic side for it to kind of work with what I was hoping it would be. But yeah,
I don't know, it's one of those, like, for that movie, like, I didn't think it was great, but I don't know if it deserves all of the flack that it got, but I agree with you that, I don't know, especially with what Gore's motivations are, like, it could have and maybe should have been a more serious movie. So anyways, we're not talking about that movie though, so I'm going to close off the corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Thor movie, let's just take a moment though to mention how the Thor movies are just so all over the place, all of them. They're just like,
oh yeah,
four completely distinct entries.
Yeah, it's a very inconsistent franchise within the Marvel universe. But anyway, okay, well, so for this one we are covering Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and like any of the movies that we cover, there's plenty of behind-the-scenes production things that normally wouldn't affect the topic that we're talking about, but they do have a bit of resonance with this particular film. So we'll probably dig into that a little bit more than we normally would about what happened in the background. This particular movie, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, released on May 6th of 2022. The first Doctor Strange came out in 2016 and was directed by Scott Derrickson, who is probably best known for horror with his films like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, and at least in the time of this recording, more recently, The Black Phone. He was set to direct Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness as well, but ultimately dropped out, and we'll discuss a little bit more about why and why that matters in terms of describing this film. But then the director that was selected to take over for him was Sam Raimi, and he's directed the Evil Dead trilogy, the Darkman trilogy, and the Spider-Man trilogy, and we have covered before talking about him and his filmography with our Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness episode, and also our Evil Dead Rise episode, so you can check those things out. The writer on the final draft of this movie was Michael Waldron, and he has worked in TV before on shows like Community, Rick and Morty, the Loki TV show, and Heels. And then as far as movies, he is slated, at least at the time of this recording, this may change a lot because a lot of these plans seem to be up in the air, but he's slated to direct Avengers 5, still currently titled The Kang Dynasty, and Avengers Secret Wars. Although we'll see if any of that changes, because it may all change. But as far as the back of the box description for this film, journey into the unknown. When the MCU unlocks the multiverse, Doctor Strange must enlist help from old and new allies as he traverses mind-bending and dangerous alternate realities in order to confront a surprising adversary. Enter a new dimension of Strange in this supernatural adventure filled with plot twists and exhilarating action sequences. And before we get into this, just to give you the spoiler warning. So, spoiler warning for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Probably some minor spoilers for the original Doctor Strange from 2016. And probably minor spoilers for the rest of the Marvel Universe. I'm not going to tell you how to watch all the Marvel movies and TV shows to listen to this episode. If you had, probably all the better, but we'll probably keep it mostly to Doctor Strange stuff. So, here we go. So, first we have a quote here from an interview with Sam Raimi with Phase Zero. The interview's name is Brandon Davis, and I'm going to school teacher style pick a reader for this, and I'm going to go with Joe, I choose you, if you're okay with reading the interview questions and Sam Raimi's responses.
Yes, teacher, I will read them.
Yeah.
That's kind of kinky.
Okay. Brandon Davis says, how far did you get to push it with some of like the action and the scarier elements of the film? And then Sam Raimi says, well, fortunately, that's really what Kevin Feige and Marvel Feige. Wanted to do. Feige.
I had to look it up too. You're good.
Okay. Let's see. They wanted to make Multiverse of Madness their first Marvel entry into the horror film, like kind of dipping their toe into the water, but it wasn't supposed to be like earthquaking, ground shaking, you know, terror. It was supposed to be the kind of horror and scariness and spookiness that you'd find in Doctor Strange comics. And then Brandon Davis said, I remember the Spider-Man sequence when Doc Ock comes to and tears apart the operating room. That scared me as a kid. Does that compare? And Sam Raimi said, that is a little more intense than what we have going on in the Multiverse of Madness.
Okay, so we'll have some other quotes that further confirm this, or further, I guess, hopefully not belabor the point, but give a little bit more elucidation on the idea. So at least Sam Raimi's understanding of it is that Marvel was definitely looking to have more of a foray into horror with this particular film than they had done so previously. And that may or may not have led to some contention about why Scott Derrickson didn't stick around, but we will cover that in just a moment. As far as this film goes for meta tag information, so streaming services and various search engines for it, 7 of them called this fantasy, 6 called it action, 5 called it adventure, 4 called it science fiction, 2 called it superhero, and 1 called it horror. For those who don't know, Marvel is owned by Disney, and so all Marvel-produced Marvel movies are on Disney+. Currently, the only Marvel movie or TV show labeled as horror on Disney+ is Werewolf by Night. So Disney, particularly on their own streaming service, they called this film fantasy, action, adventure, science fiction, and superhero, but they did not call it horror. I thought it was also worth looking at what the first movie was, since we're looking at the second film in a franchise. is the original film no one called horror. It was labeled as action 8 times, adventure 7 times, fantasy 3 times, science fiction 2 times, and superhero 2 times. So of both movies, only Multiverse of Madness was called horror by one service. And then as far as Google and Wikipedia search trends go, so we usually see if they've been searched a lot in October, which might mean people consider it to be horror, but there wasn't any conclusive data on that. There wasn't really any uptick in searches for this in October. However, that being said, this being a Marvel movie, it is a little bit more like an episode in a TV show than it is like an individual film, or at least that's always how I looked at it. So I think that a lot of people tend to watch through the whole series of films rather than individual films. So I don't know if that's maybe affecting why people wouldn't search for this more during October, because they're not looking at a single film. They're looking at, given the analogy, the TV show as a whole, and thinking about Marvel when new films come out more than they're thinking about it during Halloween. But can't be sure on that. As far as Google autofill, when you search, if you do, is Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, then one of the suggestions is a horror movie. So at least that's something that people have been searching. Is Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness a horror movie? We did an Instagram poll where 40% of the people polled said yes, Sam Neill directed it, so it is horror. And 60% said nope, Marvel doesn't do horror. And then last but not least, I usually check the horror subreddit to see just what people are saying about movies, if they have any concerns one way or the other. And for Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, most people were willing to go with the idea that this was a horror film without really giving it any pushback. There'd be a couple people here and there, but most people were kind of on board with that classification. So, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, is it horror?
I say no. I say not horror. It's like, I don't know, maybe if you cross your eyes, like children's horror. Not horror.
I think it is horror. I wasn't sure about that, and I didn't think about it really on first viewing, but I definitely think that it is horror.
I was thinking about this along the same lines as Joe, and I actually saw people on Reddit kind of suggest this too. I saw somebody say in the best way possible they thought of this as Baby's first horror movie. So I think in a way it's kind of like that. Like, they didn't mean it necessarily disparaging, just to say, like, if you wanted to introduce someone to horror and they happen to be a fan of the MCU, then this would be the movie you'd have them watch to get them into it. So I don't know if children's horror is exactly the comment I would want to use for this, because it's still a little bit more adult in content, but I would go so far as to call it gateway horror, if we could do that as a genre. So I would say enough in that category to say yes, but it's just barely on the horror side of the fence. I think intentionally so.
Maybe there's like a subcategory of horror that's like PG-13 horror.
Something like that too, but then you look at movies like The Ring were PG-13 and it goes way harder than this. So I don't know if PG-13 horror is exactly what I'd call it either. True.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I was like, my comment was like, if I cross my eyes, children's horror, not because like I think it's like so like not horror, but it's just like I'm not exactly sure what to call it. It's not exactly children's horror, but I don't feel like it's full blown horror. And I end up falling maybe just on the line of not horror.
Yeah, this is like the marijuana of horror in old school terminology. It's a gateway horror that leads you to deeper, darker horror. You know, you do the marijuana of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and before you know it, you're doing the heroin of The Exorcist. But in any case, before we get full into the film, I wanted to see how familiar were you with Marvel movies before this? Were you kind of following the Marvel films through? It sounds like we all kind of were, but I figured I'd double check that before we go too much further.
I think I've seen nearly all of them. There's been a few that I've missed, mostly on the more recent side, because of Matt's aptly named Golden Age having ended. I would agree with that assessment. I've become a bit less interested in the MCU overall over the last couple of years, but I think I've still seen almost all of them.
Yeah, I've seen, I think, every film up to and including Avengers Endgame. And what was the names of the two of them? Both of those Avengers movies where Thanos is and they resolve the Thanos storyline. Anyhow, and then I also watched the Spider-Man ones post Thanos, but that's, I haven't really watched anything after that.
That would be Infinity War and Endgame. So I'm a big comic book fan from way back, kind of already said in the intro. Like I said, I've got comics that I apparently have bought for me growing up that I don't even remember. I worked at a comic book shop and I still maintain the best job I've ever had. I got paid to sit and read comics all day so I could recommend them to people. It was nothing you could live off of, but still one of my favorite things to do. I haven't seen every single Marvel movie at this point, certainly up until Endgame I had for the Phase 3 side of things. The Multiverse Saga I've been a little bit more spotty on. But yeah, so pretty up on at least some of the comic stuff and most of the film stuff. But so I saw this when it came out and was pretty well versed in all this. And then I wanted to see also, how familiar were you with Scott Derrickson, who had directed the original one and was supposed to direct this?
I wasn't really familiar with who he was. I've seen some of his stuff, as it turns out. I just didn't realize I had. And I did like really like The Black Phone, for example.
I don't think I had ever heard of or seen anything from Scott Derrickson before.
I really liked Sinister quite a bit. That's one of those, some movies I like immediately and I'm sure that, man, I like this movie and I leave the theater thinking I'm going to buy it. And then some movies I kind of have to sit with a little bit more and then I find myself periodically thinking, oh, I should rewatch that because that was good. Sinister was one that took me like that. I watched it the first time. I was like, okay, yeah, that was a good one. But then I've had like the gnawing urge to rewatch it a few times over the years, so it's kind of grown on me a little bit more. The Black Phone, though, I'm a big Joe Hill fan. I have read all of his novels, most of his short stories, so that was enough to get me into The Black Phone. But during the watching of that movie, I was like, I am buying this because I'm going to need to watch this again because I loved it so much. I know a lot of people did. And also, I believe it's, let's see, which entry was it? He also did a Hellraiser movie. I'm sure I've seen that one, but it was when Hellraiser was starting to go downhill. I don't know if that has anything to do with him or not, one way or the other, as far as that particular film. So I was a little bit familiar with him. It was kind of one of those things where I was kind of connecting the dots where I was like, okay, I've seen this one and I've seen this one. I didn't know he did all of these, but it was sort of like Black Phone that got the realization in me, like, okay, I've unintentionally been paying attention to this guy's work and I've liked it. Okay, so I've got quite a bit here that I wanted to go over just kind of real quick with the way that Marvel works and then Scott Derrickson's relationship to this film. So one of the things I wanted to bring up is the idea of the way that Marvel has kind of a house style for their films. And the way that that works is that Marvel uses a lot of previs in their films, and that's become more and more common for them. Essentially, previs, or previsualization, is an animated storyboard that Marvel can use to kind of map out sequences. And they used to use it a lot for action sequences, but as time has gone on, they've used it even for quieter, moments in films to the point where some of like the big things that are happening in films are mapped out using previs, sometimes years and years in advance. And sometimes those sequences are mapped out even before a director is hired to do the film. So because of this, the people doing the previs are almost as important to the construction of the film as ultimately the director that gets hired on to do it. But that has kind of led to some criticisms that directors working for Marvel have far less control over their films, and that it kind of keeps Marvel movies feeling more standardized, but doesn't allow them to kind of move outside the box quite as much. So just kind of that idea going in, of course, that's something you can research a little bit more outside of this podcast, but I thought it was worth at least bringing up as a baseline for what comes next. So I wanted to look at quotes from both Scott Derrickson and Kevin Feige as far as when Doctor Strange 2 was announced, and then also quotes from them after Scott Derrickson dropped out. So we'll have Matt read the first quote from Scott Derrickson after the San Diego Comic-Con Doctor Strange 2 announcement that happened in July of 2019.
Okay. So, Scott Derrickson said, "But when I came and talked to Kevin about doing a sequel, I said I don't want to do just another sequel to do a sequel. If I'm going to do it, it has to go into the territory that drew me into the Doctor Strange comics in the first place, which is how they dipped into the gothic and the horror and the horrific, and we're going to make the first scary MCU film."
And then not long after that, people had some questions about whether or not this movie was supposed to be a horror film or not. So we had some clarifications post San Diego Comic-Con from Kevin Feige about what he viewed that as, what that meant. So if I could get Joe to read that quote number two there from Kevin Feige.
Yeah, so he said, "I wouldn't necessarily say that that's a horror film, but it is, as Scott Derrickson, our director, has pitched it. It'll be a big MCU film with scary sequences in it, the way when I was a kid in the 80s, Spielberg did an amazing job. I mean, there are horrifying sequences in Raiders that as a little kid, I would," and then motions to cover his eyes, "when their faces melt, or Temple of Doom, of course, or Gremlins, or Poltergeist. These are the movies that invented PG-13 rating, by the way. It's fun to be scared in that way, and not a horrific, torturous way, but a way that is legitimately scary, because Scott Derrickson is quite good at that, but scary in the service of an exhilarating emotion."
Okay, so as far as the announcement side of it, right, Scott Derrickson already has a reputation as a horror guy before he's even hired to do the original Doctor Strange. And then on the announcement of Doctor Strange 2, he's talking about wanting to push it towards that territory, not necessarily calling it horror, but at least saying the first scary MCU film. Kevin Feige is echoing those comments too shortly thereafter. So there's definitely this idea that it's going to push that direction. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't have anyone tagging the original Doctor Strange as horror, but we do have people tagging the second film as horror. So then we're going to flash forward. So that was just in July of 2019. So flash forward to January 2020, when Scott Derrickson ends up dropping out of the film. And so in the aftermath of all that, he did a podcast interview with the Discourse podcast, where he was explaining the reason that he dropped out. And a lot of people had speculated at that point that the reason why is that he wanted to make a full tilt horror film, but that Marvel wouldn't allow him to. And so what he had to say on the subject was, "You know, the movie I wanted to make and how I wanted to make it was different than, it was just increasingly obvious that we were pulling against each other. And that's how you make a really bad movie, I think. When the producer or the studio and the filmmaker are making different movies, you end up with a monstrosity. And you know, that's why I had to bounce." End quote. So then we've got one more quote then from Kevin Feige on an Empire interview where he kind of wanted to give some kind of clarification with that, where he said, there's been some thought that that was the creative difference with Scott and Marvel, and it was not. Because we loved that idea. The intention was that Strange would guide us into a much creepier side of the world. End quote. So I guess should have led with this, but Kevin Feige was basically asked that ideas. Scott Derrickson wanted to make a more straight horror film. You guys wouldn't let him. So his response was basically, no, that's not exactly what the issue was, because we wanted something creepier. And you can kind of see from the quotes that they were saying that from the get-go as well. So the question is, did Scott Derrickson want to make a Full Tilt horror movie with Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness and wasn't allowed to, at least as far as what they are both willing to say publicly? That doesn't really seem to be exactly the case. But as I mentioned with the previous situation, there is kind of a Marvel formula at play with these movies when they make it, which could potentially make it problematic to really veer hard into some of these other genres. So that leads to my question to you guys. Do you think that Marvel can even really make a horror film, or is their house style too rigid to really allow for that?
I guess I don't have an exact answer for that. I think, is it possible? Yeah, maybe, but I think it's really hard to do, you know, because directors like come in with maybe a large part of the story already written. So I imagine that's really difficult as a director to do, and a writer and everybody involved, really, just to have so many hands in the pot and so many like people saying what this has to be. So I think that would be really difficult to make happen.
I mean, I think that they can, because my answer to the prompt was that I think this one is horror. And I also feel like you can still really feel that this is a Sam Raimi film. You know what I mean? So like, I don't think that Marvel's house style is too rigid to allow for the expression of the director. But I do think it's going to be what they say it's going to be. So when we talked about this maybe being a family-friendly horror film or starter horror film, I think that's probably as far as Marvel is going to go into making a horror film. I mean, we have Blade coming, which we'll see what that's like. And we also did have Morbius, which, you know, did we talk about that one? I feel like we talked about it, but I maybe missed that episode.
No, we didn't talk about that one, but that is it's Marvel, but it's produced by Sony. So it's not MCU proper, despite the Vulture appearance that sort of happened there.
Yeah. So, you know, either way, what I said there is still stands with it, but, you know, we'll see what Blade is like. But I think this is probably the deepest into horror that they're going to delve. Unless they just really start to kind of go off the rails and try to figure out what they need to do to get people watching Marvel films again.
Yeah, it's possible they might delve into things a little bit more art house. I think part of the problem that you have with Marvel is that Endgame was a really good bookend to the story they've been telling for so many movies. So that's something that they're still trying to figure out how to come back from exactly. But in any case, I wanted to see, because the only film or TV, TV series or TV episode that Marvel's been willing to brand on their own service, Disney Plus, as horror, was Werewolf by Night. So I was curious if either of you had seen that and if you felt like, was that more horror than this?
I have not seen it. I'm not even sure what that is.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. Sorry.
That's okay. I did see it. I think that it delves a little bit more into kind of striking a loving nod towards the Universal Monster movies of like the 30s. But I don't know that I think it's necessarily more horror than this film. I think it's just coming at it from a different direction. But I think it's still very Marvel. So I don't know. I think, obviously, I said that this was horror, and so I'm willing to go with that. But I don't know if I expect to ever see a full-tilt horror film that's part of the MCU. I mean, part of the bread and butter is accessibility. Maybe something like Deadpool versus Wolverine being rated R would open up the doors for them to try things that not everyone could or has to see. But I just don't really expect them to delve into that, because I think ultimately they still want to make movies they feel like anybody could go to. I don't know. Outside of all that, would you consider, if you saw this movie and you didn't know Sam Raimi was involved with it, and you didn't know anything about Scott Derrickson's history, would you still think of this as possibly being horror? Or do you feel like some of that interpretation is influenced by knowing some of the creative forces involved with it?
For me, I don't think it has an effect. I do agree with what you said earlier, Matt, that you can feel that it's a Sam Raimi movie. I think if I didn't know going in, that, like, it's one of those, like, I can feel that it's a Sam Raimi movie, but I can feel sort of like he only maybe got some of his way on things, because there's some scenes that are like, yep, that's definitely Sam Raimi. I mean, you get the big giant octopus with like its eye getting pulled out of its socket, and you get a little like I don't know, pop sound when the eye pops out. It's like that's Sam Raimi. And or yeah. I don't know, there's just several of those type of little moments in the movie that if I hadn't have known he was in it, I would have suspected by the end, I guess.
So the interesting thing for me is I didn't actually know that this was a Sam Raimi film when I was watching it. I saw it in the notes when we were here, and I was like, oh yeah, that's absolutely a Sam Raimi film. But I didn't know while I was watching it.
Okay.
So, yes. I still considered it a horror film in my head even before coming into this.
So I know that we've seen, as a group, that we've seen some of Sam Raimi's stuff previously. So what would you say is Sam Raimi's scariest film? And how does it compare to this?
I wouldn't say that I've seen, like, I certainly haven't seen all of his stuff. And of his horror stuff, I guess I'd say, I think maybe I'd consider just the first Evil Dead movie maybe the scariest of his films. I think that was, you know, more kind of going for the straight horror vibe. Compared to this, I think it's very different. Very different in many, many ways. In budget, in tone, in, you know, just what it was willing to do. It was a lot more raw. Yeah.
I mean, for his horror, I've only really seen the Evil Dead movies, so I guess Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2, in my opinion, would be the scariest ones of his I've seen.
Yeah, I would agree. I think like Evil Dead 1 or 2, or I don't know, not to put it in like a three-way tie, because that's not like he's necessarily done a ton of horror films, but also Drag Me to Hell. It's funny to me to think about this movie and say that I'm willing to say it's horror, because I know looking back to Army of Darkness, I said I didn't think that it was, but I do think that he maybe goes a little bit darker on this, even though this feels a little less like his style than his other films, to me personally, at least in the early parts of the film. I feel like it feels more like his work as the film goes on. But yeah, I definitely, you know, looking at the original Evil Dead, obviously there's a first film sort of almost art house raw vibe to that film compared to something like this. It's almost a little unfair to compare Evil Dead 2. You can see kind of some of the horror comedy aspects maybe in comparison, making things a little bit more upbeat. Of course, seeing Bruce Campbell in it is a big kind of clue that maybe Sam Raimi was involved. But we'd mentioned earlier a quote from the Phase Zero interview with Sam Raimi about this movie. And there was kind of another telling point that I thought was of interest, especially talking about the Marvel House style. And so just to read that, the interviewer asked, "We've come to love a lot of your work because you have a very distinct directing style. We love the smash-ins, we love the tones you set. At what point in the film would you say we should look out for what you would say is your proudest? This is Raimi, this is your touch. You got to do a thing, you got to do your thing here." So then Sam Raimi's response to that was, "Well, I don't really have a sequence like that. I tried not to make it about me, but make it certainly as exciting as possible, be true to the characters and really please the fans. And I hope I succeeded, but it's not really about a Raimi thing," end quote. So I guess hearing that, obviously we said we did feel a little bit like Sam Raimi's films. If you felt like this felt like a Sam Raimi film, or did you feel like he was successful at kind of taking the Raimi thing, quote unquote, out of it?
I mean, I guess I've kind of already said, but I guess if that was his actual goal, then I don't feel like he totally succeeded, because I did feel like there were some very Sam Raimi moments. And like, I feel like you get like the zombie Strange, like looks to me a lot like Evil Ash, and like a very similar style, I thought. And
especially on the resurrection with the light across the eyes.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of just moments like that that just sang Raimi's name to me. And I won't say there's like tons of those moments, but there are like just a handful of those for me, I guess.
I was going to say one particular one is when Wanda like crawls all broken limbed out of the reflection into the room with them. Felt very like Deadite to me.
Yeah, I think there's moments of it. There's things like kind of quick close-ups that we get. I feel like it starts to feel like him the longer the movie goes on. But there's some of the things you can tell that he likes. Like, he likes to do Dutch angles. So it's kind of like where you take, rather than having just a straight vertical shot like you would normally get, kind of turns the camera just a little bit. So you get a lot of those and zoom ins and things. You don't get any of the shots where it like follows a projectile in motion, and there's certainly opportunities for it. So I feel like it's his fingerprints still show up, but it takes a little while for me, at least anyway, watching the film, for them to start to feel more obvious. I feel like it's a little bit more subtle until maybe till you get to the 2/3 through the movie mark. So it starts to feel like him, but maybe a little less so than some of his other stuff to me.
I think one of the other moments that felt like it was when you get Wanda starting to do the dream walking, and she's like stalking the other Wanda, but like, it's like he's using the camera as like the stalking angle. And that kind of felt like a little bit Evil Dead type stuff to me, with you get the camera, I don't know, kind of floating through, and that like representing sort of the spirit of Wanda, or in, you know, Evil Dead's case, the evil. So that was another moment that felt like him to me.
That makes sense.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I like that.
And so we've seen, at least through his Evil Dead series, we know what Raimi is like when he's trying to be scary. So would you say that Raimi was trying to scare you with this film?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe sometimes. But that's... yes. Okay. I'll put more of a fine line, fine point on it. Yeah, I think he was at sometimes. And I think my... maybe my issue with it was not so much that I didn't feel like he was trying to be scary. I think, and we can, I think I want to get into this with some of the other points a little further down the line, but I think maybe one of my bigger problems with it was using Wanda in the way that they did because of how I felt about that character beforehand. And like, this movie had, like, I had a lot of like disconnect with what was going on with the movie, you know, A, because it's Wanda and like this, it doesn't feel like Wanda, and B, because it's a multiverse movie. And I have kind of a problem with a lot of multiverse type things because like, I feel like it takes some of the, I don't know, like, you're not supposed to take it as seriously because it's a multiverse. Like, there's, you know, there's infinite number of these things happening out there, so why does this matter, sort of thing. And like, I feel like, I don't know, you kind of get this thing where I feel like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, and being like, well, we're gonna use Wanda in this terrible way and make her a villain, but we still do want you to feel good about Wanda, knowing that there's other good Wandas out there. But I have a hard time with the way they did it in this, because we've watched this specific Wanda, we've watched her arc, and it didn't feel like what this Wanda would do. I don't know. Sorry, I kind of diverged from your actual question, and maybe got into more than what I meant to right now. But yeah.
Okay, so I do think that this movie was trying to scare, and some examples of that. So one, the movie kind of starts out with this encounter with this kind of like Lovecraftian sort of creature, which I know this creature is something that's in the comics already. I don't know the name of it already, but the portrayal of the creature, I feel, is like sort of Lovecraftian kind of style horror. So that's one thing. There's also jump scares in the movie. There's a lot of body horror moments, both with the zombie Strange and with Wanda. And like, literally, she's an evil witch going on a rampage killing spree, and probably has some of the most gruesome body count attributed to her in the MCU, I would say. Maybe I would venture to say that now from this movie. The scene with Professor X when he's like in that vision with the other Wanda, very like frightening horror stuff there. The quick pull, like the jump scare of the Wanda in the little cave, and then the quick pulling back, and then her jump scare snapping his neck. I think that's probably one of the biggest horror moments of the film, and very classic Sam Raimi looking horror to me.
Yeah, I agree. During the third act of the film, the way that Wanda is used, she's used in a lot of jump scares, and they have her kind of like either having a warped sort of more demonic looking face, or they have her using, or, you know, with the red eyes in general. And then, of course, I don't know that he's necessarily trying to scare us with the zombie Strange. I guess, as it turns out, he was actually kind of reluctant to put that in. That was more the writer's idea than anything of his. He was a little bit worried about including zombie Strange because of his previous body of work. But then having the souls of the damned and how those were kind of engaging with Strange. So I feel like, yeah, I don't think he's necessarily trying to scare you with the whole of the movie, but I think that he's definitely going for some scares throughout the film. I think everything he said, and from the context of watching the film itself, there's definitely moments where he's trying to be scary. So I guess to get into the tension side of things, because we've talked about it a little bit here, but to dig into it, we've talked about in other films, in fact, Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2, we talked about the idea of the horror hero and how sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to maintain that horror feel with a character who is equal to the horror that needs to be fought. So first off, this is a superhero movie, right? Doctor Strange is literally the title character of the film. So how does that affect the tension building for a film like this?
It definitely had an effect on me, I guess, as far as like I wasn't really worried about Doctor Strange. I think it's not like it's impossible for them to kill off heroes. They've done it before, and you know they'll probably do it more. And maybe if they would have actually done something like that, well, that gets into other stuff. But like, I was never worried about Strange, I guess. And it didn't ever, I guess, disappoint that expectation. So I do think that had an effect on me.
I think this is probably the number one reason why the horror status of this film is even in question, is because the stakes are low for your hero, because it is Doctor Strange and you don't think that he's going to be killed in the movie that he's the titular character for. You do worry about the lives of some of those around him, but in general, the people who do get offed on screen are nameless or just recently introduced in this film, so you're not connected to them. So when they die, it's like, okay, well, that was pretty gruesome, but I haven't been watching this character for like 20 films, so it's not as bad. So I do think that's one of the main things, is that the tension of the film doesn't necessarily feel like a horror film throughout. There are tense moments of horror building, but because it is Doctor Strange, the tension levels are low in general.
Do you feel like that extends to him achieving his goals as well? So maybe we never thought Doctor Strange would die, but did you think that he would lose? That maybe America would be killed, or maybe Wong would be killed? Or was that not really a concern either? You figured Doctor Strange is going to save the day.
I think that Marvel has definitely done this person lost in the film. They've definitely done that. So I think that that could have been a concern of mine. This is the second viewing for me, so it's hard for me to remember how I felt when I initially saw it, but I can only say that I don't think it would have been surprising if he had lost to an extent in this film. But I think the way the MCU works is that a loss is maybe never losing the war, but just losing a battle.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think like the way that they set this movie up a little bit, like I think I was maybe worried about Wong because I felt like that could have been a character that we could have lost. The way they structured like America, like her thing was like, you know, they were, you know, they kept being like, if Wanda gets America, then Wanda like will control or destroy all of reality, all of multiverse reality. Just the stakes that it sets, it's like, well, there's no way that that's going to happen. I don't think, you know, like,
they were almost too high for them to really threaten with.
Yeah, like, there's no way they were going to pay that off exactly, I don't think. Like, I guess there could have been, like, a, like, half victory or half loss kind of situation, but, yeah.
But it's not like you were looking at the Incursion universe and saying this is a real possibility for the world that Doctor Strange is coming from. You didn't figure that was, the stakes might have been set that high, but you as an audience member never felt that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I agree, I think that's kind of where I came to this movie too, because at the end of the day, there's the tacit promise of a superhero movie that ultimately the superheroes are going to win. They might have some minor losses, but they're going to save the day. I think that's why you get such a gut punch for a lot of people when they viewed Infinity Wars, because that's really one of the only Marvel movies where they lost, and lost on such a big scale. But because of how rare that is, I don't think I went into this film expecting anything like that to happen here. I figured that ultimately he would prevail. So I guess going into that too, just to look at the bigger scope of things, do you feel like you can have horror tension in a superhero movie, or are they ultimately incompatible?
I think you can have a lot of tension in superhero movies, but I think it's more like a war movie tension. And that's what you get what I got from like Infinity War, and that kind of thing, where like that is a big loss and it, you know, hurt a lot. But you know, it wasn't the same as like horror tension. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking about it as I'm talking. So somebody else should talk.
Well, I'm somebody else.
Yeah.
I think that you can have horror tension in a superhero movie, but it's never going to be as tense as a straight horror film. It just isn't, because the whole idea of superheroes is, in general, good triumphing over evil, and I don't think it can be a superhero movie without some good triumphing over evil sort of things. I mean, you could say Infinity War is the one that does not have good triumphing over evil, but I would argue that Infinity War is just part one of a two-part movie. So I do think that those ideas are definitely clashing, and again, what makes this film sort of your family horror, PG-13 horror vibe, rather than like just straight being able to say straight horror.
Do you think in terms of the MCU as a whole, so not just looking at superhero movies, but just specifically looking at the MCU, this is the 28th film, and that doesn't even take into account that at this point you had at least two seasons, maybe even three seasons of TV shows that had aired, with the WandaVision, a season of Loki, and I think a season of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So it being the 28th film entry in this series, does that also make it harder just because these characters are so well established at this point?
I think maybe that comes, like, my thoughts on that maybe come back to some of what I've already said about Wanda, especially with the context of like sort of the last time we saw Wanda was in the WandaVision series. And so like I kind of, you go into this movie, like, or at least I went into this movie with sort of that relatively fresh on my mind. And like her arc in that show was sort of like, you know, being like ultra depressed about the events that took place in Endgame and Infinity War, you know, rightfully so, and her like making a bunch of mistakes in her depression. And then like the tone I felt, or the trajectory of her character towards the end, was like trying to come out of that and like figure herself out and be a better person for it. But like that's the trajectory, and then you get the start of this movie, and like, you know, you get Doctor Strange going to meet her in the apple orchard, and they're talking, and you're like, okay, I see where this is going, and I like it. And then like you start getting like hints of like her being a darker character, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, she's not out of her like, you know, deep depression stage, and she's still maybe doing some things that aren't like in line with her as a person. But you know, I still love Wanda, and I still like, I'm still in her corner. And then the movie just progresses on and on and makes her darker and darker, and she just slaughters people, and you're like, there's no redemption from this character that I love. And like, so like it made me upset about the movie and the trajectory of the movie. And like you were saying, just because we've been with Wanda for so long, to like have her turn like that was really, really difficult. And like, I felt like didn't make sense to me, I guess. So Yeah. Sorry. Another sort of roundabout answer to your question, but yeah.
No, that's good, because I wanted to talk about that aspect of things too, because you're right. Like, this character, I just was looking at it. She's been in maybe 4 or 5 films before this film and a whole season of a TV show, which is like several movies unto itself. She's been in the MCU for 7 years, and then a horror movie's only as good as their monster, and this movie, if it is in fact a horror movie, wants us to accept that the monster is a character we've seen as a hero for the past 7 years. So I think maybe that's part of what it makes it a little bit harder for me to say it's full-fledged horror, is because some of the creepier moments involve Wanda, but we've seen her acting heroically and selflessly for so many years now, nearly a decade at the point where this movie comes out, that I think it's a little bit harder to buy her in that role, especially when the film wants to give her some form of redemption at the end of the film as well. And I agree that it's a misstep changing her characterization from WandaVision, where I thought she'd kind of come to terms with things, and then reverting her a bit to do this film. And they even talked about that on the production side, how that was felt a little awkward to some people involved with it. But so yeah, I tried to not think about that too much in terms of whether I thought this was horror, but I think that it does affect how people viewed it, because accepting the character's twisting further, it's a little bit difficult to accept that, and then by accepting that, further accepting the premise of this as a horror film. I don't know. Where do you come out with all of this too, Matt, since I guess me and Joe have said our piece on it now, accepting Wanda as the monster of the film or not, and how that affected it as horror or not?
So I don't necessarily know if I can say 100% how I thought it affected it as horror, but I do think I felt like it was a strange decision to have this mainstream to have this big mainstream Marvel movie be so heavily dependent on you having watched some of WandaVision, and I didn't watch WandaVision at all. So for me, basically, this character went from everything that happened in Endgame to this. And you get some exposition like about why that's going on, and I think you can watch this without having watched WandaVision, but I just think it's weird. Maybe to me it helped it be more horror having not seen WandaVision at all, I guess. Because it sounds like...
like it was more shocking somehow?
Yeah, because it sounds like there was some sort of backwards character development between WandaVision and this. But... yeah, I didn't really stop to think much about why she was kind of popping off and becoming so brutal that she was just going to kill anybody in her sights. So that wasn't really a good answer to your question, just that I thought it was a weird choice for them to do that.
No, that's okay. It's what you thought, so that makes it a good answer in my opinion. So at least going into Wanda's actions, did this movie feel gorier than you normally see an MCU movie as?
I feel like particularly when she like implodes that one dude's head, that's probably like the most memorable gory moment in an MCU film for sure. When she rips apart Reed Richards, like that's pretty cool, but it's like CGI'd and he just turns into ribbons, so it's not as like shocking. But also when she like cuts Peggy Carter in half with the shield, you know, if they showed like her body, like her torso like sliding off of her legs or something, like how you would typically see that those kind of scenes in other actual horror films, then, you know, definitely would have been big horror. So it's just that cutaway that makes it like not as horror-y. But those two kills in particular were pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's essentially what I was going to say too. But yeah, the like not showing like showing but not showing. It's like a very pulled punch that didn't quite feel horror to me.
So digging into that scene, because it's probably one of the rougher, maybe more memorable scenes in the film, just because you're watching all these people killed off. So obviously, there's lots of horror movies where the people that end up dying and dying brutally are people that haven't had much character development, that you haven't spent much time with. Does it feel any different in this movie, where we've already established that none of us felt the stakes were particularly high for Doctor Strange or for the characters that we were coming back to, like Wong or Christine or America Chavez, who's at the root of, is it a Chavez? Yes, America Chavez, who's at the root of the whole story. So maybe it didn't feel high for them. But so we're watching this group of characters who we've just been introduced to, but we kind of know because we've seen alternate versions of them in other media. Does killing them feel horrific just because of the gore? Does it feel horrific because we cared about them? Did you feel like you got a chance to care about them? What were your emotions during the Illuminati fight outside of just the gore vibe, I guess?
I have a mild rant on this, so you should go first, Matt.
Okay, so I was going to say that the killing off of the Illuminati definitely feels more meaningful than your kind of nameless wizards at the sanctum place that they're at. And especially because they put some, like, they put John Krasinski in there. So even though it's John Krasinski and you haven't been with him long as Reed Richards, you still feel like, oh man, that was definitely a purposeful choice, I feel like, to cast him there. And then obviously you're connected to Patrick Stewart as Professor X and Peggy Carter, you know. So I think that there was a little more of a gut punch to see those characters get killed in the way that they were killed. But it still was like, okay, we just introduced these. It's not super meaningful that they're all dead. Doctor Strange goes home, has a happily ever after, and nobody ever thinks about these people again. You know what I mean? So I think it was like the semblance of meaningful deaths, but not really meaningful deaths.
Yeah, I think that plays into my rant a little bit about it, just because, well, first off, like just what you said, like, I feel like they, you know, get you, they're like, oh, isn't this cool? Like all these beloved characters, and by, you know, you get Patrick Stewart there, and like, oh, isn't this neat? And neck snapped, and, you know, just like, and it's just like kind of frustrating to me. But like my rant is more like I've had a hard time being like a like mainstream comic fan for this kind of like multiversal type environment that the comic book universe has. And, you know, I like it all. I like a lot of the heroes. I like a lot of the stories, but like I have a really hard time getting into a lot of this mainstream stuff on the comic book level because of this idea that like it matters, but really none of it matters. And, you know, because of it's a multiverse and because like, you know, in the comic book world, as soon as you get another writer coming on, it's going to be rewritten or changed to be the story that they wanted it to be. So I feel like that the MCU is going in that direction, and it is something I dislike, because like it's sort of it's that same thing that I mentioned earlier, the like cake and eat it too thing about like they want to pretend like this matters but also tell you that it doesn't matter at all because it's in a multiverse, and I don't know, it's just a little, I guess that's my, I will refrain from ranting further about it, but that's my mild rant.
No, that's okay. And I think that you're right, is the multiverse angle of things. It's interesting to see all these different characters and different variants and things like that of characters, but it makes it all feel like it counts just a little bit less each time you see a different version of a character. I mean, Marvel already played fast and loose with who's dead and who's not dead throughout the Marvel Universe. I mean, how many times have we seen Nick Fury die at this point, right? So, and now at this point, you can pretty much kill off any character you want to, and you can always bring it back. It's the same way I felt at an Endgame, right? Because they told us, all right, the deaths that we see in Vormir, for instance, so going back to Infinity War and Endgame, so we see Gamora die, and we see Black Widow die on Vormir to get the Soul Stone. And we're told, this is permanent. We can't bring these characters back. These deaths are permanent. But in Endgame, we bring back Gamora from the past, and she's still running around alive in the Marvel Universe. Now, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 goes a long way towards establishing that this is not the same Gamora, and it's not quite the same thing. But introducing just time travel to it meant that I was kind of like, I don't fully accept that this can't be undone. You already showed us how it can be undone in the very movie you're telling us it can't be undone. And now that you're introducing the multiverse, even more so. So we should care a lot that these characters are being killed, but if there's an infinite number of these versions of the characters, we can just pop over to another dimension that's slightly different and grab them. I mean, if you look at the fact that Michael Waldron has also written for Rick and Morty, which kills off their characters sometimes hundreds of times in a singular episode just to bring back another version of them, it feels a bit like that. I know that horror movies all the time introduce characters who we barely got to know, and we watch them grisly die, and we care about that in terms of them as humans, but it means a lot less because of their character development. And you're getting the same thing here, so it's a little bit weird for me to say that it feels less horror when they do it over here in Multiverse of Madness, but feels perfectly like horror when we watch it in a slasher film. But here we're not even dealing with, while we do have gory elements of it, the focus is less on that. So it lessens the horror vibe. And because we don't care about the characters as much, that also lessens the horror vibe. So I think that it kind of, if they were going for making a scary film, but a less horrific film, then I think intentionally or not, they sort of pulled it off with these characters. So there's my long sort of rambling rant, I guess, but it's, I don't know if that's exactly what they're going for, but it sort of works either intentionally or unintentionally having them not matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just going to add to that, as somebody that has been a comic fan and read a lot of comics, even if you're not talking about the MCU, you just, as a comic fan, always know that there's no such thing as permanent death. You know, everybody always comes back at some point in some iteration, always. It just always happens. So that does definitely lower the stakes of anyone dying in an MCU film. Like, you know, 10 years from now, they're going to do some revival and friggin' Tony Stark's going to pop out of the grave, or what, or he's going to be transported in time went to revive the Marvel franchise. You know what I mean? So it's just,
there's already rumors that they're talking to him about doing that, you know?
Yeah, there's no permanent death. So yeah, that does definitely kill the tension of, well, it kills the tension, that the potential horror tension of permanent deaths or your characters being in real danger.
So outside of the death and outside of the gore, we do have a lot of creepy imagery in this film, with Doctor Strange inhabiting his multiverse dead double. So we've got Zombie Strange wandering around with half his cheek missing, the almost reference to the Army of Darkness Resurrection of Evil Ash. We've got the souls of the damned and them kind of looking to possess him, and then him sort of using them as a cape. So outside of talking about Wanda, outside of talking about Gore, what about that aspect of stuff? How did that play into whether or not you saw this as horror, sort of playing in that sandbox with those types of creatures and imagery?
I thought the souls of the damned were scary. They were scary looking, but then like, it's sort of like it's a very horror thing, but it almost immediately gets negated. They, you know, like the souls come out and they're like telling like Doctor Strange, like, you're going to deal with the immortal consequences of these actions. And then Doctor Strange is just like, nope, you're my cape. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard. It was a little hard for me to take them too seriously because of that.
Yeah, I think it's horror imagery, the zombie Strange, and like it's got some body horror sort of elements to it, and obviously the spirits are horrific, but it, like I said, when we talk about horror, we talk about the tension. So the tension rises and falls, and good horror will raise that tension really high and then bring it down a little bit, but then raise it back up again. And I think that this film, especially with like the zombie Strange, has like just a little nubbin of tension that goes up, and then you're back down to, you know, you're not frightened of him at all because it's still Strange.
He's the hero.
He's still quipping and he's still the hero. And yeah, so it has a little tiny bit of body horror, horrificness. It's a zombie. He's a zombie in it, basically. But yeah, it's not even the most horrific moment in the film.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it looks really good. Weta FX, they did the creation of the Souls of the Damned. So that's, in part Peter Jackson's company that worked on the Lord of the Rings. So I think you can really tell in the visualization of those creatures, they look different than you tend to see in the Marvel universe. I think a lot for that reason. So I think that was a good choice. But as you have both said, Zombie Strange is never an issue of tension because that's our hero. And for whatever tension the souls of the damned bring to it, not only does Strange bring them under control very quickly, Christine's also able to handle them without any mastery of the mystic arts in the other dimension. So they're very quickly established as not a threat. And so again, it kind of goes in, I think, the entire ethos of this film is we'll make it scary, but we don't want to make it horror. So we introduce this thing and it looks a little creepy and it gives a little bit of a horror vibe, but we knock it down as quickly as we set it up just to let you know as the audience that you don't need to worry about this. And then overall, I think that's kind of everything I had in mind to cover, at least as far as the aspects that make this horror or not horror. But did you guys have any thoughts on that before we kind of just give our review of the film?
I don't know if I have anything new. I think I kind of already said this thing, but I guess one thing that for me, sorry if this is a repeat. I can't remember if I said this exactly, but like I just often found myself like waiting for sort of Wanda's redemption in it. And like, definitely she was scary, but like, I guess I always felt like in the back of my head that like she did some irredeemable things in this movie. But there was still like, okay, I don't think they're going to leave her character there. And they tried not to. I don't feel like they redeemed her, but they at least got her to a point where she kind of was like, okay, well, I see the errors of my ways sort of thing. So I don't know, but I guess I always expected that. So like, as creepy as she was, as bad as she was, I don't know, that I think held it back for me a little bit.
Well, and that leads into the whole thing. So I guess just to say, as far as the review side of it, did you like this film, and how many post-credit scenes out of 5 would you give this film?
I probably sit around the, I think, actual number of post-credit scenes that this one had. I think it had two. So I'm in the two or three range on this movie. I think it's like it's got a lot of cool visualizations, and I did like some things they were doing with it, but overall I just couldn't get behind the whole evil Wanda arc, and I think that really took my liking of the movie down a lot. So yeah,
I liked the movie, but when you stop to think about it, it doesn't make a ton of sense. And again, I thought it was a weird choice for them to rely so heavily on you having watched a TV series to be able to follow this movie, and then somewhat according to Joe, the TV series not even really being congruent with how they presented the movie either, is just a little bit of a weird choice. So I think probably a 3 out of 5 for me. I thought it was a cool film. It was really good visually. I think it's one of the best ones post Endgame that I've seen. But yeah, it's the story, you can't really stop to think about it too much, or else it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, I think I would agree on the rating with Joe. I would go maybe 2.5 out of 5 stars. Maybe that's being a little bit harsh, but I agree. I haven't maybe mentioned it as much during this episode, but I thought that they did a really good job of, because Wanda Scarlet Witch, you know, she was in the movies before and you cared about her and you had your moments with her, but it wasn't until the WandaVision TV series that you got to really focus in on her as a character, and that's really where I began to care about her and what happened to her and about her development. And I feel like the TV series did this whole thing of really doing a good job of having her work through her grief of having lost Vision and really making that multifaceted and making her a more fleshed out character. And then only to, I felt like, and I agree with Joe completely, drop that and turn her fairly, I know they tried a little bit, but fairly one-dimensional in this film to make her just the villain of the piece, especially when they have her like running rampant through the Illuminati and stuff like that. So as much as I like the visuals of this, and it was fun to see Sam Raimi dealing in superheroes and dabbling a little bit in the horror again, her character and the way they chose to deal with her really lessened the experience. I liked it better this second time, I will say, getting over the sticker shock, we'll say, of what they did with the character. But I think it's one of the things that always keep me from really liking this movie, is just feeling as cool as the things that she might do, or as the scares that she might provide, or the visuals that they might have, that part of the film's always going to feel rough. And if a Marvel movie, and indeed a horror movie, live or die on the strength of their villain, I think that's always going to be a big problem for this film for me.
What are we going to do for our post-credit scene?
Well, we have to reference something to build up towards the next chapter of the story, right?
Right.
Well, I guess speaking of that, then thanks for joining us on another episode of Visit Horror. We will be back in 2 weeks, and hopefully, I know I promised this last time, but hopefully we'll have Brianna back with us, because this is the movie we're covering next is the one that she suggested, and I haven't even seen, and that is going to be Frailty, is what we are covering. So I guess we should have a post-credit scene where she pops up and asks us to join the Frailty Avengers or something.
Yeah. I've got the Frailty Initiative or something. I don't know.
The Frail Avengers, and it's just a group of superheroes that gets their asses kicked constantly.
It's like an entire superhero team of Mr. Glasses, but from Unbreakable, but without the intelligence.
Yes.
They're just glass.
Yeah.
Not Mr. Mr. is my father.
They're not even, yeah, not Mr., not Doctor. They're like Junior, Glass Junior.
Nick Junior, because Nick Fury is Samuel L. Jackson, and that's...
Yeah!
You get Nick... Okay.
Maybe we should cover that Nickelodeon documentary and see if that's horror. It sounds pretty rough.
Definitely horror. I watched it, and it's horror, I would say.
Ugh, gross. Oh,
okay.
Oof. It's gonna ruin the hell out of my childhood. But anyway, okay, thanks for joining us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and I have been Steve.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Zombie Matt.
Yay! Bye, and by the Eye of Ashanti or Time Stones and stuff. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us at Is It Horror? We post new episodes every other Friday. To stay up to date on all things Is It Horror, follow us on Instagram or X at isithorrorpod, or email us at isithorrorpodcast@gmail.com. If you're enjoying the show and you'd like to help support us, you can recommend us to a friend, follow and rate us on your podcast app of choice, or you can check out our store on Redbubble. In the meantime, stay safe and keep asking yourself,
Is It Horror?
Look at you guys. You stuck around to see if there is an after credit scene. And there isn't. There's just this. That's all. Just me. Talking about nothing in particular. But you're already used to listening to that, so enjoy, and sorry you stuck around, and I just got the last Infinity Stone, or something. Okay, bye!